Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, another very interesting show dealing with, to say the least, an esoteric area of metaphysics and spiritual issues, and that's the elements of energy. And I'm going to reveal some things tonight that I doubt have been ever revealed before. So that's always interesting. And some of it deals with areas where I can only reveal, we'll say, a quarter or so, maybe half, up to a certain point, because there's two or three reasons why. The first is that in order to explain it would supersede most elements of science as it has been developed in modern societies here in this world. And so consequently, that's something I'm not supposed to do. And then but I can go up to, we'll say, the edges of where things are presently understood and push them to the limits of what I think is appropriate. And then in addition to that, there are some areas that deal with evil, because evil uses energy in a different way. And I'll reveal some things about some of the differences that you may not know about. But at the same time, I'm not going to make it a textbook on how to manipulate energy so you can be a better evil person. Wouldn't that be probably very wise? Then in addition, a third factor is that in terms of trying to, we'll say, demystify or reveal the esoteric factors or elements behind energy, there are some things that don't really deal with science as much as they deal with, we'll say, the spiritual side of existence. But even those spiritual factors are, because of various reasons, inappropriate to reveal at this point. So this is a couple of things about that. So those are the places where we probably won't be hearing anything about. But in general, there should be a lot of stuff, a lot of elements of energy that may be quite, we'll say, an eye-opener. So let me start off by saying, and for many people this will hopefully not be too new, that there are three parts to God's mind. The first two parts are what some people refer to as will and choices, or consistency of choices, which is will, which also might be considered purpose, or in other people's vernacular or thought process, it's creativity and the ability to be free to be creative. So all those factors kind of come together, and they make up, we'll say, the area of the first part of God's mind. And that part is preeminent. It is the part of God's mind that dominates in terms of enlightenment, bringing light in. It is necessary for it to connect to the second part of God's mind, for it to be complete enlightenment or complete light. But the first part is always the most critical and cannot be avoided if you're going to have the light that most people think of as being a sign of spirit or spiritual aspects of a creator. Now, the second part of God's mind is consciousness. Consciousness, or in some people's vernacular, is sometimes referred to as the ability to connect together various thoughts, sometimes, connect together what would be the content or the elements of thought, and make that thought have a direction, so that the connectivity is the element of thought that limits the field that the thought is part of. When I say field, consider it the field of all the things that anyone might think of, and or it could be about a specific subject. But in either case, bringing these things together is the element of consciousness. It means inclusiveness. It also means love. All of these words that we use are like pieces of the puzzle of the second part. puzzle is not so much a puzzle, I hope, for people who have been listening and or have read some of the materials I've read, or other parts and other materials and other, we'll say, shows on ageless wisdom by people who have an understanding of what it is about. Now, when you combine these together, you've got the first and second part of God's mind, you have completed thought, and you have what is known, if it is combined in a way that encourages others to combine it in a similar way, then you have, we'll call it, spiritual thought. Now, spirit is the thought of God when it applies or is used to, in some way, benefit others' thinking. So, when we talk about spiritual thinking, it is thinking that helps others to become better at thinking, and thinking, therefore, more like the Creator thinks. Because the Creator seeks that others have not only some level of thought, but thought that has with it the understanding or consciousness connected together in a balanced way. And that produces the replication or similarity to the Creator's thought itself. Now, it isn't the same as being a Creator, nor is it always the same exact thought, but it's the method of thinking that we're talking about here. So all of that together deals with the first two parts of our Creator's mind. And it, again, that was a very, very, very shorthand explanation. But I try to present it in different ways in each show so that people can gather together these all these different ways of seeing it and maybe gain a better understanding or more consciousness from just hearing about that little part of Angel's Wisdom, which is a big part because it's describing the mind of our Creator. Now, the next part has to do with interactions. Now, why are interactions so important that they are actually the third and the final part of the mind of our Creator? Because it's interactions that allows life to grow. And it's the growth of life that grows the Creator beyond its initial creation of itself. Fascinating idea. Okay, so with those things put together, interactions allow life to grow because life is able to develop itself, to create itself, as its Creator did. So in many ways, we could say that life is an extension with freedom of thinking and freedom of interaction among and between itself and among and eventually between its own Creator. Wow, that's kind of an interesting statement. I like it. It almost sounds like poetry. And so that is a way of looking at the process of developing life, and it comes from the mind of a being who stated to itself, and eventually to everything else, that it seeks to grow at the benefit and for the benefit of everything else that is allowed to both create itself and to choose whether or not that creation is either like or not like its own Creator. So life has this incredible thing we call freedom, which is the first part of God's mind. And without the freedom, there cannot be light. And light, again, is spirit applied in some way to some part of life. So it's an amazing kind of way of understanding the whole process. And the reason I went through all this is because in order to understand energy, we must gain a way of defining, which is what I did, what it is that energy is supposedly involved in doing. And energy, which I haven't fully defined yet, have I, is really concerned with and involved with the intelligent activity of the Creator, which is the interaction of life. So if is an interaction of life, and if that life is in a form that is something greater than spirit itself, it has a form that is beyond just the aspect of spirit, then there must be some amount of energy present, because the energy is what constructs the form besides that of spirit itself. Now, where does this energy come from? Well, it comes from the third part of God's mind, which means it has to come from intelligent activity to begin with, or intelligent interactions. The same thing. The process is kind of interesting because there are beings called monads, like they're one in consciousness. And they share consciousness. They also have a full enlightenment within themselves. So they're enlightened spirit, and therefore they go beyond just the question of their fully enlightened spirit. They go beyond even spirit. And they take some of themselves, and they reduce the enlightened part of themselves in spirit. They reduce it to sacrifice it so that other life can be created. Sounds familiar. It sounds like they're acting similar to their creator, to God. And they very much resemble the God of our universe. These beings, strangely, actually come from another part of existence different from our own universe. They are seeking to understand a new type of universe created by our God, and they voluntarily and with full acceptance by the creator of our universe enter into our universe in a limited role, and that limited role is to, learn about and understand eventually and participate in the creation of life that is new to them, and that is a way for them to participate in experiencing what a God of a universe such as ours has in store for the creation of life and existence itself. Fascinating idea. There's a lot more to know about these beings, but tonight's show is not about that. But at any rate, so they give up. They give up a good deal, actually, of what we would consider to be perfected spirit. And that spirit, oddly, becomes less than perfect as soon as they give it up, because they are such exalted beings that they are perfect in light, but they haven't yet been co-creators of life within the lower realms, we'll call it, the dimensional parts that are less than where they exist in our universe. And so this is an amazing thing that they do. And at the same time, all of the interactions that life could be creating, all of them within and around a particular star, because monads are kind of fixed to the planetary development around a particular star, they actually decide not to use any intelligent interactions themselves, so those interactions could be and are used by a myriad of life at a lower level of both consciousness and dimensionality than they exist in the monadic dimension of time and space. And that's the amazing thing, is that they are continuing to make these great sacrifices. And the great sacrifices allows intelligent interaction to now be something else, because it's perfect, but also unused in the dimension of the monads. Isn't that fascinating? They have perfect interactions, because they're perfect beings at their level of consciousness, but they have nothing to interact with, because they can't interact with each other, because they share their consciousness together. So they decide to allow their interactions potential to become part of all of the interactions of life less than they are. And once they decide to do that, they separate and keep all of the intelligent activity away from their interactions in what we call consciousness, and it becomes part of the spiritual plane, which is the plane one lower than where they are, the dimension with less dimensionality. And from that point, it goes to all the lesser planes, each one with less dimensionality than the one that is of greater dimensionality. Sometimes we refer to it above that. And so the interesting thing about this is that all of this amazing amount of intelligent activity is converted into something that is less than but more useful for the creation of life, but less than the perfect intelligent activity it started off to be. But intelligent activity is really not worth anything if you don't grow more life with it, and that's what the monads realize as soon as they realize it. And the what is remaining then from the intelligent activity is various types of energies. How does energy come out of intelligent activity? Well, intelligent activity, when it is perfect, requires no time, no effort, no space, and all things happen at one indefinable instant, so that there is virtually an instantaneous conversion of what we would call intelligent activity back to a state of perfection. However, when it is less than perfectly intelligent, in other words, the interactions between anything is less than intelligent, the result is energy. The energy has two basic functions. One of them is to become a form or vehicle or place you can put spirit. Spirit can enter into the energy as form, and the spirit and form then can become a sentient being eventually. Life doesn't have to be sentient at all times, but eventually it moves in that direction. And so the amazing thing about how, we'll say, energy is a foundation of the existence of what we call the development of life is that it is the lesser controlling the greater in the process, and it prevents the, except for evil, it prevents the greater beings from having a direct impact upon and control over the lesser actual control based upon what I just described, how it works. And so the good news about that is it is a system which is immediately and systematically designed to keep life, we'll say, as a creative source rather than a replicative and puppet kind of source of existence. And that part of that process, again, is that the energy part of things separates life from each other, and it causes time to separate from space and for forces to be involved, which separates form. And that causes life to individualize and to become more self-creative. It also allows life to overcome some of the forces and to reduce some of the efforts and to become more and more perfected in itself, not from other sources telling it or forcing it to do anything, to become more perfected in itself, to become better in its interactions with all other kinds of life. Better meaning more intelligent. Now, what is intelligence? Intelligence is the ability to do all the things I just said, to reverse the forces, to allow less and less time to take place and fewer, therefore, mistakes in any activity. And finally, to allow any particular interactions between any kind of life to take place at what is known as the speed of light, which virtually actually is the speed of thought in each dimension of time and space. So the remarkable thing about the system that is explained in Ageless Wisdom and can be explained in mathematical terms and in science, but you have to know something about physics, and specifically both relativity and quantum physics, to explain all the things that I just described in a more, let's say, spiritual way. But they too are interchangeable in reality. And therefore, what I'm explaining is supported by science, by modern-day science. And it means that the creator of our universe was and is a being with amazing wisdom and the ability to create something so wondrous that it is a model of, we'll call it, perfection in the development of self-realization, self-actualization, and self-creativity. And that is the fundamental nature of creating life that is godly, or more like it, creator. A very interesting process, to say the least. Now, I realize I covered a huge amount of information just now, but you know what? I've covered a lot of this stuff before, and this may be filling for a lot of people. And the people that it isn't for, you've got opportunities, many opportunities. They've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows that I've done on different subjects, and you can pick and choose to help you to understand the things that I'm not going into real depth tonight about, but just touched on in what I explained in the last 20-some-odd minutes. All right. So we have a system that right there, gives us an explanation for energy. Energy is needed because it allows the development of individuality and self. If you didn't have an energy model, and I've tried in goofy ways to avoid having an energy model, and just to see if you can make a universe to, you know, avoid all that hard stuff to deal with. If you're a life form, anyway. And it turns out that the toils and difficulties of being alive are a result of the need to have self-creation. And you can't separate them. At least I wasn't able to. And I'm convinced that there probably is no such thing. Now, evil will convince some that, oh, there is a way about it. You just take it from others. Then you don't have to worry because you use the forces against others and you get free energy that you eventually can call effortless, in a sense, because you're stealing it, and you enslave others, and it seems hunky-dory for a while, except eventually you run out of the life of others if you keep doing it. And then, even if you are dealing with an entire planet, you eventually will run out, and then you're in big trouble because you won't be able to overcome the enormous forces that suddenly, very suddenly, will be thrust on each person, being, who has chosen the life of people and has done its job to destroy life at the benefit of evil, and eventually runs out of the resources. Interesting idea. So the deck, you could say, is stacked against evil because, although evil can, for a while, kind of get around this system, the inevitability is that evil is part of life, and if it has to destroy life to exist, it eventually will destroy itself. Now we're going to get more into evil because it's kind of an interesting thing. We're going to talk about some things dealing with a thing called electricity, and the concept of positive and negative and things being attracted in certain ways. And we'll talk about how evil tries to monkey with that and try to come up with a solution to its quandary of how to destroy life and God and become greater than what God is, and also to convince others that God doesn't exist while it's doing it. Kind of a trick it pulls. But we'll get to that a little later. I do want to talk about, though, the basics of what energy means in terms of the different dimensions. So energy begins in its own way as something separated from space and what we call light, and it becomes a thing that can be used as both form and movement in space. It dominates the spiritual plane, oddly, because although spirit is many more times, we'll say, capable of informing form than energy can create a form in the spiritual plane, energy is needed for the beings that exist in the spiritual plane. And it is used in a very judicious way because, again, there is a tremendous amount of spirit in relationship to energy. And the spirit is seeking to very efficiently use the energy to create life forms that can interrelate and have interactions that are near perfect most of the time. This plane, which some people refer to as the nirvanic plane, it is the plane of perfection of form to energy. And the perfection is not in a balanced way. The spirit is considerably imbalanced, there's a lot more of it, than there is the energy itself. And you might say, well, why is that? Why isn't the plane of nirvanic, you know, this is where everybody is, super consciousness and great beings exist there? Well, why isn't it in perfect balance to each other? And there's a good reason for that, and it has to do with the idea of creation itself. In order to be highly creative in the lower dimensions of time and space, the beings that exist in the spiritual realm need to be able to sacrifice a good deal of their spirit through processes that they create in lower dimensions of time and space. And so they have to have an abundance of spirit in relationship to the form parts of their existence because of this a very strong tendency on their part to be very sacrificial and therefore very creative. They actually create the archetypes of what we would consider to be the greatest of ideas for life forms and many other parts of different planets and star systems. It doesn't mean they're controlling the development of life, because that's done by the life itself. But they have a great deal to do with the archetype of a specific way of life. And so that provides a new kind of system that the life forms that exist within the world that they are creating on, sometimes it's a world, sometimes it's several, within the star system. Those particular areas of life, they help to make these, we'll call it the archetypal relationships of spirit to energy. That controls eventually the expressions of life without controlling the interactions of those expressions. That sounds a little strange. So let me try to define that for you so that you can see it a little easier. Let's say that you wake up one day and you say, today is an interesting day. I think I will go and create something new because I feel very creative in my existence. But you don't create the world in all of its interactions around you. You create within your ability to control the time energy model that you're working within and the space that you're involved in as far as dimensionality. How you're going to interrelate to those beings that choose, and you choose, to become interactive with. That all is your choice, right? Okay, and theirs. But so you have freedom of choice. But what you can't change necessarily is the world itself in total, which is designed on a larger scale and doesn't involve the individuality of each life form. Rather, it involves the big picture of what kind of life may be the specific type of ray energy that is the planet's hallmark. Maybe certain other plans of the planet that go way beyond the individual interactions of life forms in that world. Now, the life forms have group souls, and sometimes they have individual souls. Individual souls would be connected to humans. And there's all kinds of other beings involved in the process. But all of them have some factor, we'll call it, of individuality. The interesting thing is that the nirvanic beings that are composed so much of greater spirit, it don't function in their creations from an individual level so much anymore. They're functioning more from a planetary and solar level of creation. It isn't that they're oblivious to what's going on in any individual factors. It's just that their particular creations, to keep it from being too overbearing and controlling on all individual life, is only about the big pictures of things. And that's what they do. So when we talk about people who are on the atmic realm or nirvanic plane, these beings are really not trying to interfere and will not with individual life forms and life existence, even under more adverse circumstances. They may not cease or stop or prevent things from disasters taking place because their bigger picture is to allow life as individuals to be self-created, even if those creations sometimes are destructive and menacing. They don't interfere. Now, some people find that a little disconcerting, but it's not when you look at it from the picture of God. God says, well, I know some things are going to go awry. After all, there's this thing evil. It can do terrible things. So there's an understanding that this thing is always not always going to be in perfect balance, and consequently, the reflection of these beings in the atmic realm or nirvanic plane are equally imbalanced. Instead of being the expression of complete balance and beauty in form that you find in the Buddhic realm, the intuitional plane, the higher plane above that, the atmic plane, doesn't have that anymore because the beings are so much less controlled. Interesting idea. And energy means a different thing to them. Energy is a way of, in the big picture sense, of balancing and controlling planets to suns and suns to each other, but it doesn't deal with the intricacies of individual life in maintaining balance. It just doesn't. So, consequently, they're not doing that, and that's good for us because it allows us more freedom to be creative, us being human beings and superhuman beings. The same would be true until you reach the highest level of superhumanity. Super beings, I should say, not humanity, but super beings, who are these atmic in consciousness beings, and they have graduated beyond where we think of being creative. So energy has a different meaning, because if energy isn't involved in creating individuality, which it does in the lower realms, I already described that and why it does that, it has a different meaning in the higher realms. What does it mean? Well, we have to look at the beings as they are being affected so that we can understand its total purpose. We have the highest part of what are called solar angels. Solar angels are actually energy beings, but part of these beings, one-third of their beingness, has nothing to do with being an individual. Nothing. It has to do with becoming one with planets and a sun, usually, sometimes other suns as well, of those stars that are creating life in a unique and, we'll call it, special way, because the life interacts with life from other universes. Yeah, I'm not talking about parallel universes. Some people think I am. I'm not really talking about that. I'm talking about universes that each one has a uniqueness, and usually it's a universe of higher development than the one we're in, of type. We're in a physical universe where there's three parts of God's mind. But there's an astral universe where there's more parts to God's mind, at least four. And there's a mental universe where there's at least five. So you can see that this whole thing has a different characteristic to it. And these beings come from those other universes to limit themselves as a sacrifice in the atomic world to some extent. And their focus comes from that idea. Now, are they actually from the other universes? Not really. They are the composite, or the so-called the result of the monads that are beings from other universes. They came out of the sacrifice of the monads, but they also came from, and this is going to sound strange, from the development from the lowest form of life all the way up to the atomic plane, and they don't exist in reality. They don't exist until the life in that world of worlds has developed itself all the way back to atomic consciousness. They do start touching into some of the elements of other universes once they do that, because they're starting to become monadic in consciousness or higher. And they're starting to become aware of not only the realm of the universe we exist in, but they actually start becoming aware of higher universes and how what they're doing here has some effect on those higher universes. And you have to be careful, because they're going really far afield about this, and some of it is spiritually a little too far advanced to talk about right now. Okay, so the interesting thing about this is that here we have a system that allows all kinds of life, from very lowest forms of life that has virtually no sign of individuality, to life that exceeds what we consider to be normal individuality, into a kind of individuality that is beyond just the universe we exist in. It exists in two different ways. Part is this universe, and starts to develop itself as a part of another universe, and eventually will move on to another universe in the process. Wow. The energy that it uses eventually becomes energy that starts in the atomic plane. It comes from energy that was brought all the way from the physical world into the atomic realm, and it becomes a white hole in the atomic realm. And from that point, that energy then takes on a new characteristic, because it returns to a state of intelligent activity. That activity actually has something to do with universes greater than the one we exist in ourselves. Wow. That's something to think about while we're thinking about it. And taking maybe a deep breath. I'll come back and tell you more about the esoteric elements of energy. And some of it won't be so far out as what I just talked about. But it will be interesting nonetheless. And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. Tonight, we're talking about esoteric elements of energy revealed. And so that last section, I have to admit, was pretty far out there. I'll try to sum it up like this. Eventually, life that is created in the lowest parts of planets develops itself to the point where it has developed its individuality at extremely high levels, and it joins with a being that was never human. So eventually the human life joins with the energy kingdom's highest life, which is called the solar angel. And the highest part of these two beings, okay, are able to interconnect in ways that allows them to create systems, archetypes of energy, how energy can be used on a particular planet or planets within a particular solar system. And the development of that kind of new, we'll call it, creations of archetypes of life, not the individual life, allows these beings to start being able to consider how there could be new ways of living outside of the universe they exist in. When they consider that, their abilities become, due to a collective consciousness and an individual consciousness together, joined, becomes a kind of super consciousness that allows them eventually to become a new kind of being called an ascended monad. The monads are in the second dimension of time and space. They themselves do not gain senses in form in the lower dimensions. They help create beings to do that, just as they sacrifice the energy that's involved in it, and they sacrifice some of their consciousness and spirit that is involved in it. But eventually, the life they help to create goes on to become a greater monad than the monads were originally. And these greater monads become ascended beings, ascended monads, that eventually are able to experience the entire co-creation of life throughout our entire universe, past, present, and future. The future part is a virtual reality, but it is pretty close to what probably is going to be, and it's based upon everything it has been. And it's based upon sense, not thought. So these beings are able to sense what life is like everywhere, past, present, and in a virtual future for our entire universe. They also are preparing to leave our universe and go to one of the higher universes to become graduated beings from this universe and new beings in the other universe and bring something new with them into the higher universe. And it all comes from the, we'll call it, elements of energy being changed from one dimension to another. Now let's talk about that. What is energy being doing? What is it? What is it actually doing? Right? We think it creates forms for spirit to exist, and that's good. But it also interconnects the activities of, as we just saw, atmic beings to lower beings without controlling lower beings. How does it do that? By a thing called dimensional exclusivity. Now, what is dimensional exclusivity? Think of it this way, that the third part of God's mind is actually a vibration, okay? Think of it as a string on an instrument. And that vibration has very complex qualities to it. At the highest level, it has seven major dimensional ways that it is vibrating at the same time. Now, when we pluck a string, it may be, to our visible senses, moving very kind of one dimension, but we'll call it the three dimensions we're familiar with. In reality, that is one dimension. And in reality, that one dimension has many other dimensions that we are unaware of. There are six more. The six more in total are the full dimensions of the string. And that full dimension is the full way that energy can be defined. Some of it is so unified that we no longer call it energy. We call it perfectly intelligent activity. But regardless, it can be represented by this, we'll call it, again, vibration. And everything that exists, as we think of in form, all particles, all waves, actually come from vibrations that start with the mind of God. And they then, from that point, we'll call it the logoic point, the highest point of the logoic plane, which would be the highest plane of existence, where supposedly the mind of God initiated itself. That particular point creates the ultimate of all these vibrations. And from those vibrations, all form or parts of energy that are of some greater density but lack perfection in activity. So as density grows, activity becomes less perfect. And as the density increases, dimensions become prevalent. There are seven dimensions because each of the vibrations is distinct in one of seven ways. And that was decided by God to begin with. It's sort of like, again, that archetype. Yes, life is free to choose, but it can't choose to have more dimensions. And it can't choose to have more of the archetype of vibrations that God chose to create. So we live on a tapestry that is created by a great being and other lesser beings that is no greater than we are. And that tapestry provides for us things that we can never create for ourselves because we're too limited in consciousness and in our creation to be able to do that. Our thinking is just too small. The vibrations are, interestingly, an expression of mind, because remember, it's the three parts of God's mind, and mind itself is what we would consider to be joining together, the seven vibrations, a conglomerate of these seven vibrations. Now, if we were to switch to physics right now, modern-day physics, and we started talking about these same things, we would be talking about a mega string theory. A string theory that is super big because it doesn't deal just, as most string theories do, with only what is perceived as the dimension of time and space that supposedly is all that there is, our universe. But that's a fallacy. Our universe is much, much greater than the dimension we happen to be living in right now. As we know from Angel's wisdom and things I've taught and other people, that there are seven major dimensions in time and space. Each dimension represents part of the seven major vibrations, which are seven major strengths, in a sense, that are vibrating in a specific way. Remember, they really aren't separated. They're only separated because that's how we perceive the universe. They're always together. It's just that we don't sense them properly or sometimes at all. All right, so energy is related to these seven vibrations. Energy comes from the lower five. Lower only in respect to our perception of them, but lower nonetheless as far as we're concerned. And those lower five vibrations produce energy because they need the two strings of spirit, okay, to allow them to interrelate properly with each other. If spirit is missing, they start canceling each other out, they start creating great forces among themselves, and they cause disruptions in form and the inability for proper movement, including the ability to move through space without creating a separation of time. Time is the result of the vibrations not being all together. But so is life. So things are the way they're supposed to be because the vibrations are separated so that life has an opportunity to recombine all of the system in unique ways on an individual level. It's not the size of the tapestry. It's not going to change how many total strings there are. It's just going to use what is there to make little nuances, changes in how it interacts with other life and how it may, even within itself, use the string of energies that it has at its disposal. Now, if we look at it from that relatively simplistic version that I just described, it has within it a lot of models of physics. But the most important thing is that it is truly metaphysics, because the present model of physics doesn't include enough to be able to support the existence of a creator, life, even consciousness. So all those things are relatively missing, and all that does exist is a presumption that there is there are particles and waves that provide a source for something that is ill-defined as energy. And that's the present model that physics exists in. Now, there are people like Heisenberg and the like that were quantum physicists who believed that thought had a lot to do with how energy was behaving and what it was or was not doing. And this is absolutely true, because thought, when it is along God's thought, is spirit. Remember that? That's the completed thought is spirit. So it appears that spirit is a big part of the having a major effect on what energy is and is not going to be, and whether it's going to reform itself into intelligent interactions or it's going to become more forceful and an obstacle to further development of life and even to the existence of things that aren't even yet alive. So we can see that thought is a huge factor in the process. And as a matter of fact, Heisenberg discovered that, sure enough, energy tends to follow thought. And I'll say it correctly, energy follows thought greater than its own. The thought of some types of energy is just to become more energic, meaning it doesn't want to move. It becomes more and more affected by gravity, and it just wants to become more of itself, whatever that could be defined as. That is because energy lacks intelligence, and it needs to gain intelligence from spirit. So energy does follow spirit, provided that the spirit's thought is great enough to overcome the inertia. Wow, that's a pretty interesting idea. And that was known about, that has been known about since the mid-1900s. readers tend to ignore it because it requires that you accept something that they can't define, which is thought and or consciousness. And since I can't define it because I can't measure it very effectively, although psychologists try to do that sometimes, they have a lot of trouble with it being part of their science. That it has been known that it is part of science for a long, long time. All right, so the energy aspect now, in terms of esoteric factors, is that energy is intimately involved with thought, especially when the thought is closer towards the archetypal thought of the creator. Remember, it isn't the same thought because that we're not puppets, but it's in the archetypal range because it's the tapestry that God created if we choose that tapestry to create ourselves with it. Now, evil has a strange idea about this whole thing. It says, well, we don't have to do that. Why don't we do the reverse? We'll just have our thought in a direction that isn't in the direction of the creator's thought. It won't be spirit. We'll call it anti-spirit or something. And there's another odd thing, and it has to do with the part of energy that has become preeminent in human development in this world, and it is in many other worlds that way. That is that eventually energy, when you deal with the lower three strings of energy in particular, is expressed in terms of an attractive element to or against itself. And that attractive energy eventually becomes a common energy called electrical. Now, electrical energy is energy that moves with the negative energy moving towards the positive in an archetypal background of there being spirit or godlike thinking. So it moves in that direction, and that's how most life maintains itself. It's through an electrical energy model. It's down to the cell and below the cellular level that everything in the body of any life form we're familiar with, even some or not, works through electricity. And you have negative things being moved towards positive, and that's the normal way that the bodies interrelate. And if you don't have that, then there's chaos and illness and death, except for evil. Evil's come up with a cunning system. Instead of the negative being attracted to the positive in energy, evil converts energy in a way which I'm not permitted at this time to explain, for the positive energy to be attracted to the negative. Wow. If you could imagine this, and I can't explain how it works exactly, if you're an evil person, you're able to get the energy in people's senses and their body to become attracted in the following way. The negative part of the energy, and negativity in terms of energy, is the energy that creates disruption and chaos, and it creates illusion in the sense. Okay? The senses don't work right. You get misinformation. So they are able, through a process of gamma, which I'm not going to explain, to allow the negative energy in people and other life forms, but people particularly, because evil is really interested in people because it comes from people. So you don't have, like, evil frogs. You have frogs that may act evil because of evil people, but you don't have evil frogs. And the people are evil because they're rejecting their creator. And they're rejecting their creator because they have sense of their creator, and life forms less than human don't have that sense. So once they sense their creator, they say, no, I'm not going to go God's way. I'm going my own way. My way is goodbye, God, and I'm going to take from everyone else. And they have found a way to get the senses of other folks and lower life forms as well. That's thought I can possess and go in life going to do bad things with, to follow the following way. The negative parts of the sense, the negative parts of people follow in a way which is bizarre. Because instead of the negative ones going towards the positive, the negative ones go towards the negative, the greater negative, and eventually the positive, the lesser positive, become attracted to the negative. And so through this process, it is, I know it sounds like gobbledygook, but I just said you got to think about it for a second. So you got all of this, anything that isn't virtually enlightened, isn't near enlightenment, can be eventually converted with some element of what would be considered somewhat positive, moving towards the negative, the opposite of normal spiritual electrical energy. And so all the senses of folks that have that condition start being attracted to evil. Not because they want to become evil, but because they're being illusioned into believing that the evil is what they should become. And they're able to do this with all the senses in a human being, including the heart and crown chakra, which gives us a sense of God. And eventually, we see God in evil, and we are blind to God and God and spirit itself. People become non-spiritual. They become atheistic. And they move towards evil, and that's how evil grows. It doesn't have to force people, in most circumstances, to become evil. It lures them into it through the illusions in people's senses by changing the basic qualities of electrical energy at a subcellular level. It actually can eventually get down to the most microscopic subatomic level. It's a pretty amazing a process. It's a terrible one. And people don't realize it, but as they're doing this, their senses become darker, which darkens their entire body eventually. And they lose the light that is in them, and they're lulled into becoming evil. Now, I know this sounds pretty terrible, but it is the way it works. And so it's good to know that at least there's an explanation based upon an energy model of what's going on. Because a lot of people say, well, how come people can just become evil? You say that all the time. Well, what proof have you got, and how can you even tell how it could happen? Well, I kind of just did. All right, so there's the process, excluding some things that would not be wise to explain at this time, or maybe any time. And so Here we have a problem, and it is covered in physics, strangely. Even if we don't deal with metaphysics right now, if you look at the model in physics, there is such a thing as I'm describing in physics. It's not that common, but it can be found. Now, I don't want to talk too much about it because you could work backwards from that model even and possibly encourage people to find evil ways, so to speak. But I will mention this, that in some parts of physics, you actually have the things I just talked about taking place. You actually have positive moving towards the negative in an opposite fashion of normal, we'll call it, electrical attraction. Now, how does that really take place? Well, there's various components to electricity. You start off with the basic, most simple electricity, sometimes referred to as just direct current, which is the movement, supposedly, of electrons through a conductor. Simple idea. Okay. But eventually, you end up with a process where, because of electromagnetism, of waves that are also moving, so to speak, around, but not in, a conductor. And moving through various other things called semiconductors and sometimes non-conductors. And these waves produce not only electromagnetism, but eventually something called electronics. What is electronics? Electronics is the effect of the waves being in sync with the movement of the electrons. It's a little hard to understand that, but I guess we'll leave it for that right now. And then eventually, you'll end up going beyond electronics and into a much more advanced realm of how we can consider some element of electricity. And you eventually end up with what's known as a field. A field is different than waves and electrons and subatomic particles and stuff. Think of it as this. The field is now becoming interspersed with thought and with spirit. Ah, that old bridge is happening. And when that starts taking place, you're reaching into this quandary that I talked about a few minutes ago of evil. That, and I don't want to say too much more about this, because this could actually be done in the physical world without having to deal with the metaphysical side of it. But there's eventually a point where the field, or fields would be a better way to describe it, are interrelating in ways that, again, have the positive things moving towards the negative rather than the reverse, because the fields themselves are interdependent upon inversions of, we'll call it, the spirit within them. And this results in some very strange effects. Some of it sometimes is good, because it can lead to strange, if not even seemingly illogical, effects of time and space being traversed or circumvented. And the bad news, the good news about that is that you could have entanglement. You could have things taking place regardless of the time and space between them, that are interconnected. So the future can be interconnected with the past, which is absolutely true and vice versa. But even more so, and they're connected to a thing called tachyons and tachyon fields. But the other side of this, which gets a little bit dicey, is that you can eventually lead into a process where the fields are not just entangled, so to speak, but you have a situation where the ability to traverse time and space becomes instantaneously circumvented. And so evil could go anywhere and be any place at any time, and it can do that. I don't want to say any more about that, because I'm afraid someone's someday going to figure this thing out in a more quote-unquote, purely mechanical way, which would not be good. But anyway, so all of that has to do with this principle of kind of reversing electricity at higher and higher levels of its own existence. And some of these very high levels of electrical kind of behavior all have to do, again, with energy, which is part of what we call sometimes the expression of the third ray. So this is a third ray kind of component. On Earth right now, the third ray is has reached its peak about a year ago, not quite a year ago, and is starting to wane a little bit. Now, what does that mean? It means the focus of certain beings who have a high propensity towards the development of civilization and energy itself in expression in civilization have started to reduce their focus of that on Earth. And they're starting, other beings are starting to increase their focus of the fourth ray, which has to do with the balance between spirit and energy. The third ray is way out of balance in terms of spirit and energy on Earth. And electrically speaking, we are using the highest principles of electronics at the present time, and we're just starting to understand and develop fields. Electrical some of these ways will be helpful, but others may become extremely dangerous. And that's here on Earth. Some planets have gone way past, but Earth right now is in this problem. Now, the reason they had to stop the development of the third ray is because if they didn't, evil would move so far ahead in the use of electrical fields that it would virtually overwhelm what already is a tough problem on Earth, and life would be destroyed and the Earth would not exist much longer. So it had to be that you had to turn off the heat, so to speak, on the, or the energy on the third ray and try to rebalance some of the spiritual sides of life. And so this was a good thing. But at the same time, it means that the development of fields now will be likely to occur, we're hoping, by people who are very spiritual and the quote-unquote pure atheistic scientific type mind will not be able to figure it out. And those that are spiritual and they do understand it will not let on in ways that will allow those that are selfish and or greatly in illusion to be lulled by evil into some very bad ways of exemplifying this particular expression of energy. So ultimately, energy has a lot of different faces to it, to say the least. All the forms are different, but also beyond form, so are the major means of expression of energy. And most of those means are connected to electricity. Now, electricity is like a third-ray component, but with a first-ray aspect. Now, what does that mean? Component of God's mind and expression. And it's an aspect of God's mind. And the aspect is strange because while it comes from the development, it develops civilization, and it comes into its own right through as civilization is developed, we can see that it started to be developed in the mid-18th century, and by the 19th century, electromagnetism was becoming quite developed, and by the middle of the 20th century, electronics was developed quite a bit, although it started at the beginning of the 20th century. And so we can see how this has progressed. And now we're going to move into a new thing called electrical fields. That is only in the most minor of places and stages. And the good news is that it's going to be very esoteric for quite some time. But the main point I'm trying to make here is that if we look at the creative side of things, electricity is a huge creator of the third ray aspect. So it's a kind of an aspect creator along the first ray. It's a creator, but it's along the third ray that its outcome comes out, its results come out. So it is a huge creator of civilization. So the sub part of civilization is at the first ray. It's a tremendous creator of civilization. If you look at from its very inception and beginnings to where people first started to understand much about it, in modern day ages, that would be the middle of the 18th century, about 1750, 1760, people were starting to get very basic ideas about it. Yes, it was certainly they knew something about electricity even thousands of years before, but mostly were ignorant of what it was and its concepts. And then, because we developed, human beings developed so much intellect in terms of the ability to monastically understand that, that not just using creative imagination, but understanding the concept, that by the middle of the 19th century, not only was the electricity so dominant in terms of its own way of simplistically functioning, electromagnetism was becoming much more dominant. And great people, great minds, took some of these ideas and brought huge changes to the entire Earth, the entire planet. And So electricity creates civilization very, very quickly once it is monastically or mentally understood. And it is growing leaps and bounds now. The danger is it can also be a destroyer. The first ray has the option, if evil gets a hold of it and can reverse it in some way, to become a destroyer as much as a creator. And some of this is taking place right now. The good news is that electricity has created far more than it has destroyed up to this point. But there is that danger that could go the other way for it. That would be very, very dangerous and bad for everybody. All right, so we have a very interesting, place to be looking from, because we're right on the cusp of these changes. All of us are here right now, I can guarantee, are going to have some wild ride ahead of us. This is the turbulent aspect of trying to deal with something as creative and also potentially destructive as the concept in its whole, electricity, not just electricity like in a battery, but eventually electrical fields that can govern the entire planet and beyond, and that have enormous effects on just anything and everything. That is important and could lead to some amazing improvements or to some very serious destructions. Evil's plan is to destroy Earth after it has consumed, through enslavement and other ways, all of the life energy and all of life, eventually, that Earth has developed in both civilization and in other ways. So it wants to do that. Its plan is to do it within hundreds of years of time from now. And whether it's going to be successful or not probably is within the next 100 or so years to be determined. It could be even less than that. So we have to be vigilant if we're going to stop the worst of this from occurring. And in order for us to really, reach a better place, one of the elements that has to take place is that more people have to become spiritual faster than has been taking place. And more people need a better understanding of the things that I talk about and others do, which is angels' wisdom, so that we have a better ontology and cosmology about how the universe works than the models that are presented in a lot of religions, or that most people who are atheists reject completely. We've got to have something that is going to replace the present ignorance and misunderstanding and rejections that are so common. This is what I suggest is the reason I do this show, because if there isn't something available and readily available, the side of darkness wins and Earth doesn't last much longer. Now, without going into great detail, let me explain what a negative outcome would be an electrical field development in which evil is in control. Now, I got to be careful here because, again, we don't want to give anybody some kind of knowledge which would become available to the very wrong folks who lost terrible things. So I will be talking a little bit, in hidden form, esoterically, about some things here. But if we're talking about an electrical field, we're talking about the ability for spirits to interact with electricity. Now, this is hard for most people to really gather, but I'll give you some examples of this so that you can say, oh, well, that's so hard to understand. So let me give you an example. Let's say that you've got a pretty advanced computer. Now, I wrote about this in some books I've written, so you can read about it, too. And let's say you've got a pretty advanced computer. It would have to be more advanced than the present ones. And your computer and you can communicate through the brainwaves. Now, we're there on some very basic functions. You can, right now, if you're wanting to, you can send messages from the brain waves, which are electromagnetic waves, very, very slight, into a computer that is sensitive to those waves, because the computer and the way and the machine that does it, which is sort of a machine, electronic encephalograph, is converting those waves into a code the machine can understand. It's a computer code. And the machine then responds by sending commands to something that is basically robotic. In other words, it converts the field effect that you have developed between yourself, your mind, and the computer into electromechanical energy that then is used to move. Okay, all that makes sense? Well, that's the beginning, the very, 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 very slight beginning of a field of electrical energy. That's the beginning. Now, if you want to make that field more complete, instead of having zillions of wires and EEG machine and all those other things, you make a connection between yourself and the computer that is completely without the need for conductors, because you are able to tune the fields between your mind and the computer to be so closely in phase, I mean the same direction, with each other, that the amount of resistance to the movement of the field is virtually none. And you want to make sure, if you're going to do this, that the thought coming from yourself is causing all of the effects in the computer and not vice versa, nor from some other extraneous source between the two. Because if something like that were to happen, you would have a very evil model and one extremely dangerous to all life. All right, so from just that, I think most people can say, I think I understand what that guy's saying now. So that's what he means by a field. Okay, and yeah, it's something that we're there. We're actually doing a little tiny, tiny, tiny bit of it. But what would happen, let's say, if the computer I'm describing now is the size of a wristwatch, or less, and you can go anywhere with it, and it converts your thoughts into electromagnetic energies that are strictly electromagnetic and that only affect things that are selected to be affected by the very thing that you're focusing on, then you start becoming able to have things like telekinesis and the ability to have psychokinesis and the ability to move things. You're starting to move into what is known as astral formative field in the physical world. First, you start off with etheric formative, which is the thing with the computer and similar to it. And then eventually you move into like another dimension, the astral, out of this dimension, but you're bringing it into this dimension, and on and on. Now, that's the thing. Remember, I said this happens for humans. It could happen in the mental, astral, and the physical, the three lower ones I said for humans. And so you could have this field developed in all those realms, and you could do some pretty amazing things. Now, the truth be that there are beings that do this right now. They're not human. They are superhuman, because they have joined their senses together to the point where they can create a field effect between all three realms of the dimensionality. So the strings are joining together. Remember those strings I talked about? And they're creating a unison in their vibration. They're not vibrating the same, but they are vibrating harmonically together. And the result is, as far as the super beings are concerned, they live in only one place. We'll call it the super dimension of super beings. And at a minimum, it involves the three lower dimensions that humans exist in, and at least one more, the intuition. So they exist in all these dimensions at the same time, and they're able to cause enormous effects, if they choose to, through the magic, we'll call it, of electricity and electrical fields, anywhere and everywhere that they choose. Now, remember this. They are higher in consciousness, and they don't interfere with the choices of one's life, and they won't deliberately or directly interfere with evil, except when evil kind of breaks the rules itself and opens the door for these beings to do something to it. But generally speaking, they don't. So the interesting thing about this whole system is those that can make the most effect choose to do the least of it a lot of the time. All right. This esoteric part of energy may be sounding a lot of like science fiction to some people, but it isn't. As a matter of fact, it's happening even as I speak between some beings, not human, of course, and parts of the world around us and other worlds at the same time. They generally do it in places and in ways that we're not noticing, but they are doing it. And could human beings develop this as part of their civilization? Yes. Is that desirable? Not right now. Because the danger is that the misuse of it by evil is greater in chance than the good that could be derived from it by those that are good people. Now, there's nothing that absolutely prevents us from doing it, but the good news is that once we're in illusion bad enough so that we might be evil, and we're there, it kind of prevents us from understanding how to create these fields correctly, because it comes from inside of ourselves, and we have to raise our own consciousness to get there. Good news, believe me. Who came up with that system? Well, those archetypal beings I was talking about in the atomic world, they figured that out for Earth. This is they do for other planets, those that are connected with each. And they came up with this to protect us. They have to, because if they didn't, around this time, if not sooner, and definitely in a few decades, if not later, we will be in huge trouble because we're going to be doing things like this, or worse, to each other in terrible ways that would be destructive. But the good news is that we probably are going to be too illusioned to be able to do it. So it does withstand the tide to some extent. That doesn't mean that evil won't win. It just means they're not going to win with such an easy victory. All right, now, some of you are probably scratching your heads and saying, how come you don't find out about this when you read, this series of books or that book? Well, because when this stuff was somewhat understood 50, 100 years ago, it was understood in very mystical ways, and it was like magic. And to most people who lived then, it was so far from reality, they had a hard time either understanding it or believing it, depending upon the person. That was then. Now, we can understand it, and some people believe it, whether for good or bad, they do. And so, it's a different time. Now, why reveal it now? Because it doesn't make a difference. The people, well, here's the theory behind it anyway. The people who can't understand enough about it because their consciousness is too low and because they usually are dark and selfish and maybe evil, will not be able to use the information that I have given so far to be destructive. And those that can will likely only create some level of good with it if they can do much of anything. And the more conscious you are, the more careful you'll be in its use. That's the idea. Does that always work? Not always. You know, there's a lot of exceptions to it that have failed in the past. But for right now, this is where we'll say we can go without going any further in relative safety. Now, that doesn't mean that despite anything I say or don't say, that it is impossible for someone to come up with some way of doing some of these terrible things and create some monstrous things. But I think that the odds are not that high, even though a lot of people fear that they are. Okay. So technology may not be as dangerous a problem as is the motives and the lack of ability to understand and see evil of people. That's the bad motives of people who are dark and evil, overcoming and snookering the rest of us, or some of us, into letting them control. And if that happens, and it's already happening, that's the greater danger. And technology, I know everybody, the science fiction writers like to write about it, and the movies and the TV shows, and stuff. They love having those things. But they're not really the danger. They probably have some element of danger to them. But the bigger danger is in our own consciousness, our minds. Because energy follows thought greater than its own. And even evil can make it greater by trickery and changing the phase relationships of energy to the thought. All right, so I think that so far, at any rate, this has been an interesting show from the idea that there really are esoteric elements of energy, and hopefully I have done a good enough job to reveal at least some of them, so people are saying, well, he's not all that crazy, but it's sort of far out there. Yeah. All right, let's move into another point or area of, we'll say, interest and concern, a little bit different from the idea of fields of energy. When we are concerned about new ways of creating form, now form is our bodies, right? Forms are all the things, the physical things we create. Forms are new chemicals. Forms are new types of life if they have not have been in that form before. Forms are all the kinds of things that are so peculiar and particular to especially the physical world, but can also exist in astral energy and astral energy. The form side of life is the side that humans pay the most attention to. We don't pay much attention to the spiritual side of life, and the form side, and we don't perceive very well energy outside of form. We have a very limited sense of energy outside of form. Oh, yeah, we hot, cold, you know, we got some idea. Well, if you sit on something that's really hot or cold, we can tell the difference or we can touch it. But in reality, the vast majority of the energy that is around us at all times, we barely perceive. We barely perceive it. Gravity, which is a huge effect on us all the time. We kind of ignore it. Except when we jump off of something that's too high, or fall out of something that's high, or if some other kind of strange event related to gravity takes place. All of that, you know, we notice, because it's just unique or special at the moment. But the stuff that's around us that's all the time, and it's prolific in terms of energy, we don't notice. This is something to be concerned about, and I'll explain more about that in a minute. But it is also true that form is that we're fixated on form. Hey, what kind of car you got? Where did you get those clothes from? I got a new chair. Hey, look at these lights. I mean, everything about form in the world around us has become almost our hallmark of, we'll say, attention. Form is a, we'll call it, transient issue with energy. Energy moves back and forth into various forms over time. And the use of form by human beings is meant to extend sense. Eventually, as we have developed a better understanding of electricity, and I explained in my example, energy itself can extend senses. That's different than form. Form that extends senses is what is the dominant feature throughout our societies, and it has the peculiar aspect of leading us into an area where we think that the world and form are the expression of life. So, human beings have concluded, many have, that the forms of their world around them is what life is about and how it is expressed. If you live in a nice house, if it's warm or cold in that house, that's the energy side. But the form side is just everywhere around. Now, the problem with that is that we don't notice the free energy so much, and we also don't realize the transient nature of the form that we exist in, because we live in a dimension where form in terms of time is relatively slow to change, only relative. And strangely, because of our own illusions, not very noticeable. So yeah, things rust, we notice that, yes, and things break if they fall down, or we notice things at the moment of sudden change. Sometimes the sudden change isn't when the thing changed, it's when we noticed it. So things rust, and we say, oh, when did that rust? You know? I mean, so our perceptions are controlled by the illusion of form. Now, the problem with that is this. It's our perceptions that gives us the information that leads to the development of knowledge that we use our consciousness to control to create new things. If our perception is constantly flooded with misinformation because form is overrunning the truth about what the world is like, we end up with a lot of false or incorrect knowledge. And consequently, our creations go bad. They either don't last long, or they become the work of darkness and evil. It's not that we want that to happen. It's that we, by nature, are an illusion because of the dimension that our consciousness is focused in, which is the physical one, of course. And we see form as so prominent. Such a big issue. Well, if you've got to go through a wall to get into someplace, you look for a door, right? Your concern is about the nature of the form and how that form is amenable to the change so that you can achieve the results of your activity. The problem is that if everything you base, is everything you're informing yourself about is in some way illusion, because you don't understand the relationship of energy to form and energy to yourself and energy to time and space, then most of the decisions that we make on a daily basis are wrong rather than correct. And this is the fundamental nature of illusion. It also damages our senses to assume that the form is the critical element rather than the spirit, that's an example, that is surrounding us. This is the nature and the rationale for spiritual discipline and for changing our way of perceiving things. It's not easy to do, by the way, because we're seduced into believing that the form of things around us is what really is there. It's the real stuff. Okay. All right. And how do we know that the form is transient? Well, let's take a chair, say a wooden one. Throw it on a fire and watch. You don't have a chair within a few minutes. And for that matter, most of what was the chair disappears so quickly that most people don't have any perception of what and where that form of chair is anymore. It's a fascinating, I know it's a very simple thing. But it's fascinating that our whole life is constructed of all these things that are completely misunderstood, or mostly misunderstood, and have such transient nature to them, making our life, after we create knowledge from the information these things give us, our life seems transient. Then we become afraid of life and especially death, and afraid to create anything because the transient nature of life as we think it, because of the way we perceive form, makes it so dangerous to do anything that changes anything. So we live in a world of fear and a lack of creativity, and we lose what we came here for, which is to co-create with our creator as a soul. We become imprisoned by things. Now, you know, in the past, the result, the way to deal with this, as you probably know about, is to renounce all form. You know, that the great spiritual teachers in the past have said, just renounce all form, and that will be one way you can get rid of the illusion of form. Yes and no. Yeah, you get rid of the illusion of form at the cost of not living in a advanced civilization anymore. It's like, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater. That way we'll solve everything. We'll all go get our loincloths on and live in the wild. Because we don't want any form, because the forms lead to illusion. Well, that's true, but you can't solve the problem by getting rid of civilization, because that's what leads human beings to be able to co-create with other life and eventually with themselves and eventually with God. So it's like getting rid of God so that we could see God. Right. Okay, so you can understand why that doesn't work. Now, what does work is the following. To realize that the form is transient and that we are the creators, not the forces that seem to be. That we can change any form, that we can do anything. And that's where you get into the field model of the electrical field model, because before long you start realizing how great we really are. And we could be these super beings that I talked about and do amazing super things. We could change any form at will if it's best for all other things in general to have that happen. You see, the bottom line is that what we really need to be are more generous, more wonderful creators, and not running away from form and life of form, but using in the most beneficial ways for others to be sold themselves. Then we solve the equation. We've got the answer, and we don't have to live in this world of illusion, afraid of the illusion itself. Now, I'm not condemning the teachers of spiritual ideas, who do say, got to leave the form, got to reject all this stuff. You know, some do believe that, and, you know, a number of people of Buddhic background, the teachings of Buddha, have thought that in the past. And there's other many other religions that have pushed that. It's not necessarily the worst thing, because you may get through, finally recognize what I finally said is the truth. It seems, though, like a waste of a lot of time and a lot of destruction of potential of creation. So, no, I'm not against technology, I'm not against civilization, quite the opposite. What I am against is illusion. So if we're not illusioned by form, we're able to see that energy is transmutable, and it's transmutable by greater consciousness, greater spirit, thought, like God's, and it can be used in miraculous ways to improve the interactions of all life. And that's what God has sought in this universe, this wondrous universe of ours, where we misinterpret that into the wrong kinds of conclusions while we're physically alive, particularly. Now, consequently, when people die and they go on to live in the astral world, they start figuring some of the stuff out I just told you. Because in the astral world, you can create things just with your imagination, which is astral thought itself. And much easier, because energy follows about 1,000 times greater Pell's constant, which is around 1900, we came up with a great formula, is determined for where he was living, which is the physical world. And based upon his observations and certain mathematical formulas, he came up with a constant which is extremely small to the amount, effectively, that Heisenberg discovered, energy follows thought. But that wasn't the only conclusion of what the quantum constant said. It meant that the vibration, now this isn't, I suppose, didn't come up with this, but the vibration of the string or the vibration of God is very, very minimal, very small. Oh, vibrations are not necessarily bad vibrations, but they can become bad more easily, and they're more difficult to get to respond to thought. So they have a slowness, but they also have a lack of responsiveness. Okay? And that leads, unfortunately, to the illusions that we talked about in our own senses that have to absorb a little tiny bit, a fraction of that vibration in order to know what the heck it is we're sensing. That's what a sense is. It takes some of the energy, which actually is a vibration, by the way, and it brings it into a thing we call a sense, and it's able to say, by matching the sense as close as we can to the vibration, ah, that is a snowball, or that is a sweater, or that is a rock. That could be a lot of different things. But whatever it is, we sense it. That's another person. And we sense it through the senses that we are familiar with in the sensual sense, and it allows us to be able to then create information. We actually have to receive some of the energy to convert it into information, and the receptive device is our sense. All right, so when our consciousness infiltrates the sense, we're able to apply the information in some way that's meaningful and helpful. When our consciousness doesn't infiltrate the sense, the information is reduced to minimal levels, and it doesn't do as much in terms of helping us to understand, that's why consciousness is understanding, what the heck we're receiving in information. And remember, the information is always some form of energy that we're receiving. When you look at something and you see a color, you're seeing a certain type of light, a frequency of light, as a certain type of energy. That's true of everything you sense. Sounds, touch, everything comes from some sort of energy. And all of the energy is coming from, ultimately, from the vibration. You see how this all interconnects? Well, the good news about this is that we can start changing ourselves to improve the senses so that we either will, in a mundane reality, mundane being not spiritual, we will improve the quality of the information about the non-spiritual parts of existence. The good news about that is you might be able to live in a nicer house or something like that. But the bad news about it is, until you apply it to how it can serve other people so they can be better serving and co-creating with God, until you do that, what you gain is impermanent, just as the forms are impermanent and the illusion is still there. Your senses may improve to be in terms of the quality to some extent, but more likely the quantity and the, we'll call it, the descriptive nature of what, defining nature of what you're observing, but your consciousness will not grow, and the ability to understand what that nature means will not grow. And that's the bad news if you aren't being conscious, increasing conscious with your use of sense, and that only comes from using it to serve others, not to be selfish. Oh, so the quality of thought, or consciousness of thought, the two words are interchangeable, is the determining factor about how our senses work in relationship to form. In the astral world, people can change things very quickly because the quantum constant is hugely larger, which means energy follows thought way, 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 way greater than it does here. And it's more obvious to the person that the quality of their thought, the quality of their thought, the consciousness of their thought, is the deciding factor in how well the resemblance is of their astral thought to the form that ends up being created from the surrounding astral energy. It's a direct feedback, therefore, to people having a greater understanding of their own consciousness. Once you get more consciousness by using your thought to be creative as a direct instrument of doing so, your consciousness grows more freely, and you're likely to become more conscious more quickly than you would in the physical world where that doesn't happen. Oh, starts working. Now, why is the quantum constant so much better? Because the density of energy is so much less, leading to much greater vibration and a more truer, with more complete dimensionality, because there's more dimension left there than there is here, greater dimension, and all that leads to a tremendous amount more responsiveness of the energy itself to thought. So the quantum constant is just a measure of all of what I just said. Now, didn't Max figure that out himself? No. And even Heisenberg didn't really figure all of that out. But the point is that it is part of Angel's wisdom, and that was figured out millions of years ago here on Earth. Millions. Long before recorded history. Because there were parts of civilization that existed then where people were much more familiar with the astral world. And because of that, they figured out what I said, but they didn't understand the physics nature of it, but they understood the reality. Okay, so the good news is that when each of us dies from the physical world, we go to the astral world. There's seven sub-worlds, yes, and some of them are more conscious than others. But everybody in the astral world is experiencing this expansion in the quantum constant. All the energy around people is giving them constant feedback that energy follows thought greater than its own, therefore the more conscious you are, the better the energy formulates into a form that is the way that you thought of it. And the thought is a creative imagination. You don't have to have a lot of analytical kind of thinking. If you have good creative imagination, you can create many great things in the astral world. Those things are not necessarily supported by monastic thinking, and there has to be a greater dimensional element added to them for them to exist fully in the mental world, correctly and properly. But at least in the astral world, they can exist, and they exist depending upon the consciousness of the person to an amazing level of accuracy compared to the physical world. So you can combine and create things so amazingly quickly and accurately in comparison to the physical world, which could take years. There it could take seconds to minutes in the astral world. Depends where in the astral world it's located, because the thought changes pretty radically between the lower subdimensions and the higher. Wow. So if we look at how energy is really interrelating with people now, it's really a major factor in letting us know what the heck's going on. And you can see how it has to deal with intelligence. It's telling us what's happening all the time. We just don't recognize it so much while we live physically because so little of it is providing anything other than illusion to us. But in the astral world, that's not true. And when you get to the monastic world, that's a whole other ballgame. Even the lower worlds, the lower subworlds of the mental world, you receive a huge bump in the ability to create the world around you through mental thinking. It's so amazing that people create alternate realities at will and live them out for decades. decades into the future to see how well, if they do this or that, and they do a lot of this or that, in experimental form, how the world will turn out. Now, there's no guarantee that it's ever going to happen that way once you reach the physical world, but in the mental world, they can test out all these theories, and they have formula to deal with the quantum constant difficulties and the problems in perception and all that, so they add all that in there, trying to figure out what kind of incarnations would be the best for each of hundreds and thousands, sometimes, of souls to incarnate together to figure out how to produce the least illusion and most enlightened physical world possible in the next incarnations. Amazing. And that's a big deal if you think about it, because if you can do that there, you're way ahead of the game. Then it's just like everybody says, well, I'll try this, you try that, and let's see what happens. You know, if you do it that way, chances that Earth is going to survive, not very high. At least the way it is done. Every new incarnation leads to usually some ultimate improvement. It doesn't lead to an improvement on an individual level for each person, but it leads to a conglomerate effect of improvement, usually, in human existence. Now, evil is trying to trip that up here, and it has been effective. If you look at how human civilizations have developed, they reach a point where they usually become somewhat enlightened, and then evil comes in, and the next thing you know, everything's destroyed, and we're back to square one, or worse. And a lot of people are enslaved and tortured, of course, and it's a horrible thing. All of that is a problem both with energy and physics. Also, it's a problem with the need to get freedom. You can't have a system of thought without the first part of thought being freedom, creativity. The two are part of the same parcel. And in order to have this creative freedom, if you unfortunately have to allow there room for the human beings, remember, the evil comes from humans, to choose to reject God. And they generally choose to reject God in two plausible ways. One is while they're physically alive because of the illusion. And then when they go to the astral world, they could live in some parts of the lower subworld, particularly the seventh and some parts of the sixth, and still buy into it because although it's easier to create there and their senses work better for a while, they can quickly destroy the senses and be back where they were while they were physically alive. Or they can go to the eighth sphere. That's a special kind of thing. What's the eighth sphere? The evil ones that live there, these, you have to be evil to live there, have created a new kind of physics. Remember I told you that eventually you can get the electrical principle for the positive things following the negative? Well, that's their whole subdimension is created that way. There's no light. They don't live within light. They live within darkness. But they can see, and they can sense. By reversing the principles of electricity, and the quantum constant is also cut in half in terms of the ability to create feedback, so people don't gain in consciousness while they're being destructive. But they don't lose much consciousness either. They kind of almost stay the same. That's their object. They don't want to lose consciousness, and they don't want to particularly gain consciousness because they're not looking to become more loving, that's for sure. They want to become more powerful. And they have developed this place where they can live, becoming more and more powerful and controlling of others and enslaving of others, even if they don't live there. Because they can go places and do things almost instantly that humans in the rest of the world, subworlds, cannot do. And they do it by reversing this principle of electrical attraction. Isn't that weird? And they have actually created a whole dimension, subdimension, called the eighth sphere, of time and space. That it's their own place. Talking about making your own world, they really have it there. And not all planets have an eighth sphere, but Earth does, because we're not a sacred world and a lot of other problems. And so it's an issue. It's a bad issue. It's a scary place. Terribly, terribly scary place. The thing that's most frightening about it is that people don't have a sense of, we'll quote, a lack of love. They can't sense the lack of love or lack of consciousness. So the good news is because they can't, they slowly lose consciousness and never notice it. But the The bad news is that they can become more and more evil and never even recognize that it's actually going to destroy themselves. And it is definitely destroying everything else. They don't connect that because of this model of what they have created that shelters them from becoming conscious of the strange changes that they've made in physics. Now, the quantum constant there is approximately half of what it is in terms of growth in the seventh subworld. And it's several times greater than it is here in the physical world. It gives them a unique place where they can be very destructive and not be very conscious, or even conscious of what destruction they may even be doing to themselves at times. Amazing, amazing sort of circumstance that comes out of this strangeness in how energy responds. Also, I mentioned this, the vibration I talked about, God's vibration, that doesn't exist in its form in the eighth sphere. Instead, that vibration is inverted. Wow, what does that mean? And I'm afraid I don't want to talk much more about that, but they actually have managed to even change that, which is one of the ways that they manage to actually create their own subdimension of time and space. It seems pretty stupid to me, but then again, being evil is not necessarily based upon having a great deal of smarts. It's based upon the desire and the will to have power in place of anything and everything, even of creation, if necessary. They don't care to create that much because it's dangerous to their power. Power becomes everything. And power is the ability to exchange energy back and forth into different states at instant will. Now you can say, well, wait a second. If the quantum constant is half of what it is in the seventh subworld, wouldn't the ability to change energy be reduced by the same amount? It would be if energy was working on the same electrical principle of the negative following the positive, which is what it should be. But if you reverse that principle, then the answer to that question is the opposite. Okay? Again, I don't want to talk too much about that. All right. So, let's see where we've come. That's a long way. Have we found out more esoteric elements of energy? I think so. We're beginning to see that energy is a real strange thing because it has so many facets to it. Now let's talk about energy relationship to time. And this is I love this topic, by the way. This is one of my favorite things to talk about. When energy is becoming less manifested because there is more intelligent interaction, time joins with space, and it takes less time in which to do anything. Any interaction becomes less time. Any movement through space becomes less time. And space itself becomes enlightened, so you don't even perceive space as the way we perceive space, which is a lack of light and a lot of distance. They just perceive just things as events that you can interconnect with from one point to another without using time or using very little of it. So energy and time have an interrelationship. The more energy is manifested from space, and I'll get to that in a minute, the more time it takes to do anything. Now, we don't perceive things that way because our ability to sense what I just described here in the physical world is very limited. Physicists know about this because they can mathematically compute it. They don't necessarily sense it themselves. But in the astral world, and especially in the mental world, there it's sensible. You can sense it directly, and it is part of life for many people. They actually experience it that way, which is good because you're less illusion when you can experience things in a more direct and honest fashion. Okay, so if we look at the time model from what I just described, one of the ways to make as much time as you want, so to speak, to have as much time as you want, is to not separate time from space and to use less energy but more activity that is intelligent. And that means activity that is happening closer and closer to how you think instead of having to exert forces, one energy against another is defined as a force, in order to achieve any kind of interaction or movement. So the answer to our quest is that we live more in a field, remember back to the field idea, in which as we think we are, and as we seek to interact, we instantly do so because our thought leads us that way, and there are a lack of forces, one energy against another, in the process of doing so. As far as forms are concerned, we can still have forms. Now, some people say, well, then there aren't going to be any forms. We believe in a formless place in the Holy Spirit. No, you still have forms. It's just that no part of the form becomes depreciated through the interaction, if it's an intelligent interaction, and the form remains forever. So what we call the destruction of form, which eventually leads to death, is caused by the energy degrading as a result of our senses incorrectly giving us information, and then we're reacting incorrectly to that information in over consciousness, and then the overall result is that we separate, take a lot of time from space. We live in the distortions of that time, and the forms disintegrate fairly rapidly and wear out. Now, it is true that there's a side of the energy kingdom that needs freedom from form, at least within the model of time that we experience time in this physical reality, about every 147 years at a minimum and a maximum, the form must be allowed to be free of form, the energy must be allowed to be free of form, so that the lower consciousness parts of energy can develop themselves into higher consciousness over a period of existence and time. They may need to move from an elemental position of energy to a demonic position of energy, and they can't do so if they're held in a form for periods of time longer than what I suggested. Now, does that mean that we can never then live in a form for more than 147 years? No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that the proportion of divinic energy has to increase rapidly as you increase the time in which you're going to keep a body. Masters seem to have figured that one out, although they're not doing it yet, and for the most part. And so it is it's a unique way of looking at energy, is that you can have a divinic body that is mostly divinic energy instead of composed of which our bodies are, mostly elemental energy, which unfortunately has a very limited expiration date. And that doesn't mean that 147 years isn't, a lot of time. We have, that still is a lot of time, but it is nonetheless part of the reason that at present we would not be able to spiritually live any longer than that, using the models of how energy is developed in bodies as we human beings understand it. We, under a higher development of electrical field, we could develop bodies that would last much longer and hold them together without causing harm to the energy kingdom, because they look for demonic energy bodies. Yes, we would give off a lot of light, too. That's a whole other thing. All right, so this is possible, and it's a good thing. And in terms of looking at it from, is this good or bad? It's neither, because it's the nature of the physical energy as it presently is developed here on Earth. There are some planets that are called sacred planets where people that are, as I understand, have mostly divinic energy bodies, and this is not a principle any longer. Those people, though, are really superhuman. Anyway, so the human races as we understand them have evolved to the point where they're not really human anymore. So I don't think it's appropriate for us to include that exception because those planets are so far beyond us. It's not the same thing. And of course, their thought is controlling much more of the realities that they experience than what we experience while we're physically alive. Now, is there any artificial way that we could, through technology, and I've been asked this question, make our bodies last much longer, or could we change our world and make energy follow our thought greater by doing something that's technologically, meaning more physical but not spiritual, changes? And the answer is not unless you want to go to the ether plane, because the spiritual eventually governs. Thought eventually governs. And unless you're going to go into this nasty change the way electrical energy is working and all this sort of crazy stuff, and literally be on the dark side of existence, you can't do it. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, it's only a matter of time. Well, I guess we will, won't we? No, no. Because we'll become more and more aware of how spiritual a question it really is, and that eventually spirit will become part of physics, and thought that is more enlightened, that means godlike thought, will become part of the equation. And then people say, oh, no, you can't do that. We don't like that. Oh, we always thought you could, but you can't. No. Unless you go on the evil side, and who wants to do that? Because they'll realize what that means, of course. And there's a good chance most people will not choose an evil way of life as they become more enlightened. So that's the good news about that. All right, so let's, I'm not quite ready to sum up, but let me give you one or two more concepts, and then we'll do kind of a summation. A lot of things we covered in tonight's show, for sure. The aspect that I think is maybe needing a little more strengthening here, since we're all physically alive, at least the people that I assume are listening to tonight's show, is looking at it from this standpoint, that at some point, someplace, we're going to die, and we're going to end up in the astral world, where most of the things I told you, you're going to say, uh-huh, the guy was telling us the truth, I should have listened to him in the first place. Okay, maybe that's my folly, and maybe that won't be your experience, but I think it will be. But let's talk about it from this point of view. Why not assume that I'm right now? What a great idea that is. Now, why not make the assumption that everything I said in tonight's show is accurate, and then use that as a model to see how much you can prove or disprove what I'm saying in your own life right now. And then you can even write me about it or call me or something. If it's more than a yes or no answer, please call me rather than send me an email. People send me an email, but can you please explain these 50 different things and how they interrelate with, email? That's a phone call. But at any rate, if you're going to get into the process, you need to recognize that it is for you to determine in your own mind and experiences what energy is really like, how it is fixed in form, and how it isn't, and what you can do to change all that, and how spirit is the critical element in most people's lives that they don't understand about, and they don't use it appropriately when dealing with energy. You can check out what I've said in tonight's show, and you can end up with either like, well, this guy is nuts, or this guy may not be nuts. Maybe he's talking the truth, or at least some part of it, and there's a lot of stuff that seems to be working the way he says it should. And I've said enough so you can go back in and listen to the show again. I know it's a huge amount of information, and you can say, well, if I do this, this, and this, I can set up an experiment and see whether or not what he's saying was accurate or not. Do remember that you have to recognize that your own senses are going to pull you at times, so you can't just say, well, I'll be the only thing, the only judge. You might want to get others to see what they're sensing, because that's how you can check, do sort of balances and checks on each other, you see whether or not it's the illusion that you're sensing, or you're getting enough accurate information, either collectively or with enough discipline of your senses, to be able to determine the validity. That's important and well worth doing because, let's face it, if a major part of the problem is illusion, you got to get through the illusion or it's just not going to work out so well in terms of your, we'll call it, scientific study of the situation. I do believe that people need to look for truth in their own minds. But the help of getting several different viewpoints is still worthwhile because we are so fettered by illusion almost all the time. And that's because there is so much form in relationship to energy, and there's so much energy in relationship to spirit, and the whole system is kind of upside down right now. But, you know, that's the reason we're here. We're here because God, through our soul, wants to create more of what we'll call it conscious life here in the dense physical world. In order to do that, you need human beings who can, the first life form, that can understand and co-create with their creator. So we need to be here to do this. It's absolutely necessary. And we came here to do this. That's the big part of the picture. All right, let me try to sum up tonight's show. Got a few minutes here. And let's look at it from this standpoint, that most of the elements of energy, despite all the things that we have learned over the last several hundred years, especially in technical aspects about energy, but most of the elements, the big elements about energy, are not yet revealed to, let's say, science in the physical world. And that means they're hidden, they're esoteric. They aren't apparent because in order to understand energy, you need to understand spirit, and spirit is not only misunderstood, it's sometimes greatly denied, and it's not included in the existence of most of physics. In order to get to the point where you understand energy, you need to see where it came from, and we went through some of that, and that it is a part of a third part of God's own mind. And that third part is for life itself to be free to interact so that it can become self-created. If it didn't have, if God didn't have a third part to its mind, or if it didn't want it to be part of our universe, say, we would have a universe in which you would have a lot of spirit, similar to what moments have, but no self creation, no individual creation of life. And the individual self is a major part of God. It's what God finds precious in its own beingness and what it wants to give and see created by life, but only can only happen through life's own choice to co-create it itself or not, as it so determines. God is so magnanimous on this that it will risk its own existence and the existence of its growth, which is life itself, to some extent, by allowing life, some part of life, which is human life, to become evil if it so chooses, and to reject God and God's plan, and to destroy life, and especially the growth of life, so that it could destroy effectively God, but it can't really. But God gives that freedom for humans to experiment, if you want to call it that, to choose to do this terrible thing, and to be this way because it allows freedom. And freedom is so precious that it's worth the obnoxious destructiveness of evil. Worth it to have the freedom to become evil or not. The system is stacked, and ultimately evil cannot exist indefinitely. But nonetheless, it is here and present, and in a big way, on Earth. And we're participating in this great experiment, and where the greatest battle is in the physical world. Everybody thinks it's the astral. I don't know why that's so. No, it's not. It's because, maybe, that evil exists in its own domain in the astral world. But it does attack, like, mostly in the physical. Oh, yeah, I know it attacks people, beings, even animals, in the seventh and sixth sub-world sometimes. But that's nothing compared to what it does here in the physical world. Look at our history, for heaven's sake. It's darn scary, isn't it? Look what's happening in our everyday current events. How are the folks in Syria doing these days? Or Egypt? Or anywhere? All right, so we've got a system that has to be allowed, has to be permitted, because it's the only way to develop individual self-structure, self-creation. And that foundation allows energy to eventually develop into form, so spirit can interact through form, and interaction through form by spirit is the third part of God's mind, which allows individual creation itself. Formless beings can't develop much self. I mean, they can develop a small, very, very small, there's a way to actually do it, but it's done nothing compared to what we're doing. The greatest level of self-development happens in the area where there is the greatest resistance by, we'll call it, forces from free energy to intelligent activity due to high levels of density, high levels of gravity that comes from dense energies called elemental energy that cause the system to basically slow down. The vibration of God is weakened and slowed to a very slow level. And most of the vibration is missing altogether because of dimensional incapacities. The singular nature, we call it three dimensions, but it's really one, of the plane that we're physically alive on, discriminates against and creates forces against even the acknowledgement and information that could come to us normally of God. The vibration is just missing. And that causes us to be in great illusion. We come here as extensions of our soul to create, under the most adverse conditions possible in the physical universe, to co-create with our Creator all of the wondrous things of enlightenment that happens not just in the physical world, but all the other dimensions of time and space eventually. And we do so with great suffering because we lose consciousness almost for the second. We're here, we start losing subconsciousness. We gain it, we lose it. We gain it, we lose it. Because our senses are tremendously battered by the effects of energy not being intelligent enough in its interactions and producing great forces. The forces cause destruction to our senses and that then eventually to the rest of the bodies that support the senses. And our consciousness is lowered because we use up so much of our ability to be conscious in the sea of forces that surround us and we interact. It's the illusion that does that to us. We came here with that purpose, and energy is the means to achieve it, yet it also is the obstacle that is so severe while we're physically alive. The fear of death is an illusion caused by this, and therefore much of the hazards and destructiveness of humans upon each other and upon all other parts of existence comes from that. There's a terrible price to be paid in suffering and in forces that we immerse ourselves into by being physically incarnate hundreds of times. But we choose to do this as souls. Now, I'm not saying it's human and said, well, I'm going to go there and be suffering. We chose to do this actually as we became going back to our soul while we were living mostly in the monastic world. But sometimes some people get the same sense pretty strongly in the astral world. It's very hard to get that sense here. If you can get that sense that you're really here on a much longer journey than from the time that you're going to be born and die here, and that the amount of suffering you're going to do here is de minimis in comparison to a very long life you have in the astral and even longer possibly in the mental, and you're going to go back to a soul state in consciousness, your consciousness will never die. The only time you lose consciousness is when you suffer immensely and when you choose darkness instead of light. But the point is that you're going to go on, and the going on is the amazing thing. And you do not have to, you do not have to suffer the consequences of fear of death. That's a sort of invoked response to the illusions of the misinformation we get through our senses. The seeming impermanence of form convinces us that life goes away as soon as the form goes away. So when your body's dead, you're dead, right? How could there be anything left? Okay, these are the mistakes of us being here, but we can overcome them. Spiritual discipline helps. Understanding helps. This program may help. Talking about this program with other people may help. And if you want, you can join a study group. That may help. And I'm going to squeak it in here at the last minute. I didn't really have a commercial because I kept going. If you want to, you can become part of the experience of gaining consciousness through life in meaning study. That's the textbook I wrote. And you can be part of this group. It's on Wednesday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m. That's Arizona time. We're kind of grouping me around time. And call us at 800-777-7850. 800-777-7850. It's beginning on September 4th. September 4th, that's next month. It's a Wednesday, 7 to 9 p.m. And we'll study all of what I've talked about and a great deal more. And my hope is that a lot of people will gain so much consciousness from this that, who knows, they might double their consciousness within a year's time or so of studying this, this book and some other stuff, too. So give us a call. Give me a call. And anything else, I'd be glad to talk to you about it. Well, we're out of time. Yeah, I got a lot in. Boy, did I say a lot of stuff. And I hope tonight's show has really meant something. It covered a subject that's a little hard for some people to understand. And it was maybe a bit more scientific than some other shows. But I think it's interesting because it gives us some reason for all the things that are inexplicable. It truly is, truly was anyway, a show about esoteric things. Things that are hidden, but now, at least in part, be revealed. I hope that it did get revealed, because I'm out of time. I can't do any more revealing, I guess. And remember, the few things I did not cover are things that should not be covered. Not that it isn't a question like, well, that guy couldn't explain it, you know. I probably could explain some of the things I didn't, but it wouldn't be good for anybody to do that. And so goodness is what we're really trying to achieve. I hope this show has been good for you, and that's for me too. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.